بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين، وبعد. We always begin with the praise of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the most kind, the most merciful, the benevolent. We send peace, salutations, salawat upon Imam al-Anbiya, Sayyiduna Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Allahumma fasalli wa sallim wa barik ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ali Sayyidina Muhammad wa barik wa sallim. So tonight, inshallah, it's going to be a very interesting session. Last night when we announced that we're going to be dealing with Islamic finance related matters, some people misunderstood this to mean that it's going to be a crypto session. And we all know each other long enough, and I somehow saw through these filters and thought that I'll start with a few preliminary comments first, inshallah. The intent was just to have a Q&A and see where we go with this. And I thought it necessary that we just discuss a few things. So firstly, inshallah, please don't record this. Not video, not audio. And don't share it on social media. There's good reason for this. All of the other programs that we have had in the last 20 days or so, these programs are available either on the Masjid website, or either they are available on our streaming platform, which is known as Safwa Online. I ordinarily don't mention it, but because some people have asked where can the recordings of the previous night's tafsir and explanations be found, Safwa, S-A-F-W-A-H .online. If you go to this platform, it streams many things there. There's other streaming of other ulama. And throughout Ramadan, there is a 24/7 live stream that you can log on to. And these programs are there along with many other programs, inshallah. So that is the first request. The second, inshallah, is the format that we will follow. I'll talk about a few things just to set the tone. And then, inshallah, we'll open the floor and give the mic around, and inshallah, see how things unfold. I have been answering questions either from this morning, either reading Quran, listening to Quran, or answering questions from about 8 o'clock till 5:40 this evening. I'm happy to carry on as long as you want, inshallah. So we'll see how things unfold, and inshallah we go from there. But with that said, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. So the matter of Mu'amalat, and the matter of dealings, business, money, trade, and finance is a very important aspect of our deen. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Quran makes mention of many matters related to money, many matters of how we relate to trade and commerce. And Quran deals with this in a variety of ways. It talks about business, trade, inheritance, loans, debts. It talks about the legitimacy of business, it talks about the economy, it talks about the modern day terms, ESG, sustainability, and you name it across the spectrum from A to Z. If we want to start deducing and deducting these principles from Quran, undoubtedly we will find that Quran gives some form of direction to this. So the matter of money, the matter of mu'amalat, the matter of Islamic finance is not something that has unfolded in the last 20, 30, 40 years as the perception is at times. Neither is Islamic finance, Islamic banking as we understand it, many of us. Many a time, our perception of Islamic finance only comes to the fore when it comes to the time that I need to buy a house, or I need to buy a car, and where are the mortgage stroke loan companies, and where can I get financing, that becomes the beginning and end all of our understanding of Islamic finance. Islamic finance is just a contemporary term because this has become a niche space. Like many aspects of our deen, as we progress and things take different trajectories in the societies we live, all of these things become very specialist or super specialized areas. And as a result, Islamic finance is one of those areas. It's not something that has developed some phenomena recently, but from the time of the injunction of the Quran, the concept of Islamic finance has been found. We, in the early years of Makkah Mukarramah, for example, mutual trade, business, or the way we understand the concept of contemporary insurance in a particular format was found way back then. The same principle applies to social finance. The concepts of zakah, sadaqat, all of these things spread across a very large spectrum. So I think we need to keep this in mind very importantly. Along with this, we also keep in mind that as matters have passed, as time has gone on, economies and the world that we live in has taken a very new form and a very new shape. That form and shape is inseparable from the politics of our recent past. The fall of the Khilafah, the fall of the Islamic Empire as a whole, painted us and gave us a whole new world that we lived in that was not pre-existent before that. The concepts and the books of fiqh, to a large degree, did not deal with many matters that we see unfolding or we see in the world that we are living. You and I, living in a non-Muslim country, while the perception of this may have been there in the past, did it actually eventuate and act itself out in the form and shape that we have now? The answer is probably no, that Muslim minorities did exist in other parts of the Muslim world prior to the fall of the Khilafah. But post the fall of Khilafah, the world that we are living in, economic migrants, refugees, people living in countries which by and large are not conducive to an Islamic lifestyle and does not support it, is a very new phenomena which we call the fiqhul aqalliyat. Some fuqaha have gravitated and even given this a term, the fiqh or the jurisprudence of minorities, that how is this dealt with, what is their nuances, and what is their dealings and how do they live under these type of matters. Keeping this in mind and without being laborious on this, the matter of Islamic finance in the world that we are living now cannot be viewed in isolation. It is literally a $1 trillion industry and more, and by industry we mean across the various spectrums. It spans across very many areas. The global direction of this, you and I, our issues, our challenges are not unique to us. There's many around the globe who live in similar circumstances. There's many across the Muslim world, for that matter, where the direction and the development of the global world is throwing very many challenges in front of the industry or the ummah at large. And the ummah continues to find solutions to this. Solutions, we as human beings and our deen, we are not static. We continue to develop. Our fiqh, our sharia continues to provide solutions for this. So as things move in a particular direction, so the deen, the fiqh, and the ulama and the fuqaha continue to attempt to find solutions. Islamic finance is one of these areas. It doesn't operate in isolation. And listen to this term very carefully. Isolation means that you and I in Australia, we're not an island. We are an island, But we're not an island in that we are not cut, we are cut off from the rest of the world. You know, it's not like Australia has its rules and then there's everybody else. It doesn't work like that. There are global standards in place, there are global bodies in place which are there, which provide standards, direction, and give a general premise to the industry. Just like how many of us are involved in different areas of our expertise in the corporate world. For example, the accounting field has standards. If you need to do reporting, any industry we are in, we need to do and check some check boxes before the boxes get ticked and we can give an approval of something. That same principle applies to the Islamic finance industry. Globally, Malaysia, for example, is of course a leading player in this. Bank Negara, which is the Reserve Bank of Malaysia, plays a very big role in this, and it's providing a great trajectory and direction in this regard. Places like Indonesia, slightly a little behind. The Middle East, of course, provides great direction in this. And there are certain global organizations which I want to just point out because I think it will become relevant just in the next few matters to discuss. And that is that over time, the ulama have formed certain bodies. Malaysia has certain bodies and the Middle East has certain bodies. A primary body which is known as IOFI, which is the accounting and auditing institution for Islamic finance, auditing, accounting and auditing organization for Islamic financial institutions. It's a very big acronym, IOFI. What this body does, it comprises of many leading global ulama who sit around the board, who sit around the table. It's been in existence now almost 30 years and continuously produce standards. Standards are just another name for fatwa. It just takes a different form and shape where many matters are set around, they threshed over, they deliberated over, and after all of this, drafts are produced and finally standards come into being, sometimes after many years. Naturally, it goes through a very big, rigorous process. People who sit on these boards are the likes of Mufti Taqi Uthmani, Sheikh Nizam Yaqubi. These are very, very big names, particularly in the Islamic finance industry. And I'm mentioning this for reason. What this then does is that any Islamic financial product being offered as a service, as a product in an institution, this becomes the standard by which the industry abides by. You cannot decide that tomorrow you're opening a bank here in Southern River, an Islamic bank, and then decide you're going to come to Imam here and say, right, you be our guy and you tell us and we'll run the bank according what you have to say. It doesn't work like that. Nobody works in isolation. It's not an island. You need to abide by certain industry regulations and rules. If somebody departs from this, which at times there will be certain circumstances where there will be a point of departure, there has to be reason for this. What's the reason that this standard was not abided by? And there has to be a very manifest, a proper deep reason for this. There can't be just a surface reason that somebody decides that it's my opinion and therefore we will depart from this. This is very, very important to understand. Across the world, we have many Islamic financial institutions offering very many different products. But the premise here is that as long as it is dealing with money, taking or giving social finance or any other aspect, there is a set of rules that need to be abided by. Just recently, IOFI, for your information, released standards on crowdfunding, which we know is a very big thing. All of us, anyone, we can just start a launch good page now for, you know, somebody's cat stuck on the roof opposite. And, you know, very good cause. And let's try and, you know, move the branch away that's broken on the tree. Nobody wants to do it. And let's collect $100 million to move the branch away and pay the council $5 and we go away with the rest of the $99 million in our pockets. So naturally, there has to be standards in place because everything is not necessarily a good cause. As long as you're dealing with money, there has to be some standards in place. Having said all of this, we run a digital hybrid space which is called the Center for Islamic Economics Australia. This is not, I have many side gigs aside from what I do here. We work with industry and we work in an advisory, Sharia advisory capacity across different spectrums. We are unaffiliated to any organization per se. Across Australia, any institution that is offering any product, we don't endorse the product or we don't not endorse the product. The reason I'm starting with this is because we've opened a Slido Q&A and a host of questions have come and will come. Which organizations can we get home financing or car financing from? I want to put this on record that I cannot tell you. I can't tell you that go to this organization or that organization to get financing of any kind. And the reason for this is that the design of these products are due to legislation inside of Australia, which is not conducive to Islamic finance. The reason is when these products are designed, there are many loopholes that have to be created in order to be legally legitimate. And there's many band-aids that have to be put in place all over the place, as some of you would have experienced, by just looking at what the Islamic financial institution offers you when you ask them for a contract. You are given a host of papers which you cannot make head or tail of. In my time, my little time in Australia, I have seen every single one almost of these contracts. I've sat with many of them, with some of you. It's a very complex structure. Our position on this is simply that we have a level of discomfort. However, every single institution which is offering a financial product has to have a Sharia board. Because we get comebacks to us that if you don't tell us, then how do we know? No institution cannot have a Sharia board. This is part of global standard requirements. If Masjid Ibrahim is offering a finance product, it needs to have a Sharia board. Who qualifies to be on the Sharia board is of vital importance. Who are these individuals? People who are not just ulama, who may not just be muftis or shuyukh, but people who are well versed in fiqh and well versed in the industry where it is at the moment. It's very easy for marketing purposes to put certain individuals, because you know they have influence in community, society, and they will bring the business. It's very easy to copy a logo from somewhere and stick it on the website, unbeknown to the industry itself, and it becomes very easy to say that we are compliant because we are displaying certain logos. Our point of reference becomes that who is the Sharia board who is there? Are these people, are they well versed in the industry? And we need to do a bit of homework behind this, and very easily information about this can be uncovered. This is not to undermine or condescending in any way, don't misunderstand this. It's just a point of reference for us to determine the legitimacy of the product or not. And then understand further that a contract is designed. Again, I don't want to be laborious, but because there's been many queries around this, I want to address this as briefly as I can. The contract structure is one. Sometimes you have many overseas bodies, Sharia bodies that may render a particular product compliant. A product compliance simply means what? That the product, as we see between these pages, is it Sharia compliant or not? Maybe yes. How it's implemented on the ground is a different story. Some of you may have had experience when you talk to someone in a financial Islamic institution, the person you're talking to probably does not know head or tail of the product. How does the product unfold? They cannot explain to you any better than you yourself know. Then there is the whole audit of the process, which is a whole different story. Many auditors, some of you are sitting here. You understand the audit process. One is you may have everything else in place, but if there's no audit happening, to see that how things have unfolded is very problematic. Sharia compliance is holistic. It's not just one aspect. Holistic means that we want to see the entire ecosystem of the product from A to Z is being implemented as it is meant to be. Therefore, it's not possible. The only way that if somebody wants to determine if a particular product is Sharia compliant, then they need to look at the Sharia board and they need to examine their contract and understand it properly and then make a decision on this. This is the position on Islamic financial institutions in Australia. That's our position on this. It's not condescending. Neither am I saying it's permissible. Neither am I saying it's impermissible. I'm just putting the matter realistically in front of you. You know, in the last few months, rates have been raising at a phenomenal rate, interest rates. It begs the question that how does an interest rate affect me when I am in a financial, Islamic financial product, which is supposed to be interest-free? Why is it affecting my rates just as dramatically as it's affecting others who have interest-bearing loans? These are many of the nuances that exist in the design of these products. And as a result, that's our position on this. I can't answer the question of where you need to get home financing, who's permissible, where you can get car financing. I can't answer that. But inshallah, if there's any further questions after this, we'll take it. I want to just move on to the crypto matter also. Just so that that's out of the way. The digital economy is real. And it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. So if anybody is hoping that this is just some people who, and they're very skeptical, in 10 years' time, we will be having a different conversation. We already dealing predominantly in digital money. Every time you swipe your card, you're doing almost something very similar. How many people deal with cash? That's why the masjid had to put so many FPOS machines for all of us. And very soon, we may have a crypto machine. I saw in Malaysia recently, in the middle of nowhere, you can buy an EFT like in the middle of the street, an NFT in the middle of the street. So the digital economy is a real one, and it's not going anywhere. We should keep that in mind. Just recently, last week or 2 weeks ago, Australia announced, if you know very well, that CBDC, central bank tokens, have now been a reality in a test phase for the last 6 months. Our own government, Australia, is very, very well into the discussion of having tokenized or digital Australian dollars that we will be dealing in very soon. How far are they in this discussion? Last week, 2 weeks ago, they, with NAB and some major industry players, released tokenized assets for the carbon industry. For those who know what this is, the carbon industry operates outside of the stock market, a good $1 trillion industry where governments deal with each other, and it's a very shady space. Very bad things happen there between governments, poor countries, third world countries, And those who know what's going on, they appreciate what I'm saying. Our government released the first tokenized carbon assets that you can now purchase, so giving you and I the opportunity to get into that industry. So the digital industry and the digital world is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. Do we need to be dealing in Bitcoin and everything else? Is it permissible or not? You're not going to get a yes and no from me either. The reason for this is also the same. The industry is developing. We all have our inclinations in this, and a lot of the time, much of the information that you find out there of fatwa, I think, comes from a premise of not thoroughly understanding. There will be many who will say it's impermissible, and you will get a 4 or 5 line fatwa saying that it's not permissible because of this. I think it requires a lot more reading to understand this. Where does this go? What is Bitcoin about? That's only Bitcoin. The last time I checked a few days ago, right now there are more than 11,000 cryptos and tokens which are there. Crypto, if you're asking me which crypto is permissible, do we need to filter out 11,000 of them? Which one of them? By the oath of Allah, we are busy with one major, major tokenized asset here in Australia. Only one contract for the last 5 months to be able, between the legals, the finances, the team, and the Sharia, 5 months just to try. This is only one token. Only one token. And the reason we onboarded it is because we thought that this is probably the closest, easiest from a Sharia perspective to deal with. When you start talking about Bitcoin, you have no idea what we're dealing with. Many of us have perceptions of things. We know certain elements of things. So therefore, I'm not going to give even an answer on crypto, yes or no. My inclination is that the digital industry, the crypto industry, is here to stay. And it's only going to grow and get further and get bigger. Can we pinpoint certain things? I'm not in a position here. There's many senior ulama who have certain opinions on this. I suggest you do your own reading very thoroughly. In order to understand this, you should read very deeply on money. There's one, the Bitcoin, Saifuddin Ammous. Some of you may have heard his name. You can Google him. He's a Palestinian, originally I think he's American. Saifuddin Ammous, A-M-M-O-U-S. He has a website as well, saifuddin.com. I suggest you look and listen to him very deeply, what he has to say. Just overall, outside of Ramadan, not now, don't spoil your last 10 days and start tonight. It's not an ibadah to listen to Bitcoin and what he says. Okay. So don't do it now. After Ramadan, he has some published books as well. The ulama, I highly recommend they read this, because he talks about currency, money, fiat currency, and how this develops, and it will change our perception on many things. And it will remove this notion that the crypto industry is just there to make money. Let's make quick investment somewhere and make a quick 20, 10, 15% somewhere instead of leaving stocks and shares and self-managed super and everything else. It will change your perception, because it's not about that. This is far larger and it's far bigger than that. It has the central banks worried. If you're looking at the American economy, you will see even this week what they're talking about and how concerned they are about this. So I'm going to leave this there. I think you're bored enough already. And move on to the next matters, inshallah, which is questions. Now, I anticipated that after these two things, there may not be many questions left. So, inshallah, I'll just set the tone here first. Some people have sent questions. We put this out last night. I think it was posted on some of the groups on the Slido, a Q&A. So I'll start with this and then just take one question while we, if anybody has questions, inshallah, then we can go with that, inshallah. Also, if you need to leave, please feel free. We appreciate it's late and it's a weekday. If anybody needs to walk out, inshallah, you can feel free to do that, inshallah. Okay, so I'll just go with this question first. I'm not sure it's some of the brothers, sisters, or somebody online who asked it. Is zakah payable on NFTs and female silver, gold, and jewelry? So, or in terms of jewelry, those who follow the Hanafi school, silver, gold, jewelry, zakah is mandatory and it is fard to pay zakah on jewelry. As far as the Shafi'i school goes, jewelry is considered to be a darura and a necessity, and therefore it's not zakatable according to the Shafi'is. And that's why the Shafi'is, you should be giving lots of jewelry to your wife, because it's considered to be a mandatory necessity for a female. The Hanafis, we have been okay on this. Okay, is zakah payable on NFTs? I'm not going to explain what's an NFT. Those who are asking the question, I'm taking, inshallah, you know what it is, non-fungible tokens. It depends, because some NFTs are just pure nonsense. By nonsense, what we mean by this is, Sharia recognizes that something must have some commercial value. Now, some person, I want to use other language, but because of formality sitting here, you know, somebody puts up some nonsense tweet. The first tweet that Elon Musk put out is now an NFT. I mean, does this have commercial value in Sharia or not? I don't think so. Okay, but they could be, and then there's other proper, say, use cases for an NFT. Omar is my good friend sitting there at the back, and he does artwork, mashallah, and has some NFTs, which are, I think, still listed somewhere on some platforms. You can talk to him later where it is, if it's still there. But this is valuable, okay? This is something which you can give tangible value to. So it's something if you can give tangible value to, provided it has Sharia legitimacy, permissibility, and it has tangible commercial value, then it will be a zakatable NFT. Otherwise, it will not be. Okay, inshallah, let's take one question. Anybody wants to ask? Feel free and brave. Maybe I sit on the chair today so I can just see you, not because somebody may feel a bit intimidated, inshallah. Any questions on anything, inshallah? Can we just pass the mic, inshallah, because the sisters at the back want to hear the question as well. Please, jazakumullah. Imam Abu Hanifa, the Hanafi school is a school that's made up of a multitude of scholars, and it has many unique nuances in the way the formulation and fatwa of the school work. Again, it's a very big discussion, the simplicity of it. Imam Abu Hanifa is the founder of the school. He has some views on some things. And then there are others inside of the school, other fuqaha, jurists who came after him, who are his contemporaries, part of his school and follow his school, his students. They also have opinions, and eventually all of this culminates over a multiple centuries, and then the school's opinions on which it prefers are then formulated. Imam Abu Hanifa rahimahullah himself in his personal capacity held a particular position on this matter. However, the school in itself, the scholars of the school, never opted for this position, as they never opted for many of his other positions, despite him being the founder of the school. So therefore, the fatwa of the Hanafi school, there is a small, very minute group of scholars who opine for this. However, the majority ulama of the school don't opt for this option, don't consider it to be the correct option. Neither do the fuqaha of the other schools opt for this option. Sheikh Muhammad Saeed Ramadan Al-Buti, he is a person, very elderly Syrian scholar, some of you may have heard his name, a very senior alim of Sham. a very senior person. I had the opportunity of, I don't want to say I'm a student because I think that's just glorifying it. I had the opportunity of sitting in his company for a bit, and I heard him say several times that for someone to exercise a view on this, it falls under the ambit of فَمَنِ اضْطُرَّ غَيْرَ بَاغٍ وَلَا عَادٍ فَلَا إِثْمَ عَلَيْهِ. Someone who is in absolute desperation. Desperation means like someone in the middle of the desert who can eat khinzir, who wine will become permissible because of desperation. If somebody finds themselves, they have to be in such a desperate position to open the door of the legitimacy of riba and interest. Because this is a very big door to open. Therefore, although Imam Abu Hanifa himself in his personal capacity opined, gravitated with many principles and regulations in place, had a little discussion on this. As I said, the majority of the fuqaha don't opt and don't exercise this opinion. Anybody else?
Most of them don't offer the offset account, so which is creating the burden on the people when you go for that. You know, you go for the Islamic finance compared to the commission bank. What are the few guidelines which you, and later on you quantify once you get into that one, that or if you have built a house rather than if you build a property rather than build it out, it's completely different. What are the certain, if you can define the two, three things, you know, which are beneficial
for the people when they go for Islamic finance. So, if you can
a little bit explain these.
I'm not sure I understand the question clearly enough. Are you looking for some? What should you look at in an institution before you make a decision?
Certainly, especially once it's kind of offset kind of thing, which is. Mostly, I find out in my journey that people don't offer. And then you have to change one corner.
Answering the question of the offset account is making a premise of the previous elements of the product. Because the function of an offset account is purely just there to lower payments. And when you consider this in the broader scheme of how a contract should be structured, it creates other issues. So answering that question is taking the premise that there are certain permissibilities on the product before that. The guidelines that I can give are the initial guidelines that you need to look very deeply at how is this product structured. And I wish I can put my head down here that even if we brought the product here, some of our students are sitting here, they will tell you that we sit for days at times trying to go through a lot of these products, and it takes a lot of time to go through this. I can't give guidelines for this. That listen, what I might do is we have a top 10 FAQ list, which is there, that check with your Islamic financial institution these FAQs and see where you're at with that and then make a decision. Maybe that's the better thing to do. And inshallah, I will make that available somewhere and on the Masjid platform, perhaps, inshallah.
Profit by investing in some house or something, and
See, okay, this, forgive me, I guess. That's what I'm trying to avoid, right? It's the structure of the... So I think let's start with one thing, right? I think we must put our views at the back. I humbly suggesting, some of us have been studying, teaching, I think now for, with my study years, 31 years. And at my, I'd like to say young age, and I'd safely say, our good friend Ustad Arif is sitting here, and we study together, he and I, we sit together with Kitabul Buyu, which is the book of trade and commerce in the Hanafi fiqh, a very advanced text. And I think he will vouch to say that the more we want to espouse a view on something, the more we should just put it at the back. Because trade, commerce, money is a very complex area. It's not as just simplistically saying that I think interest is this and I think this is what profit is. It's a very complex nature. To answer your question that in an Islamic bank, all they're doing is giving ownership, you know that anybody who has some form of a semblance of a housing contract, where does the ownership and the title lie? Is it with you or the institution? Is it with you or the institution? The title deed is where? And then the bank's renting you your own property. See, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just telling you that that's the first page on your document which most of us don't know how the contract's even structured. We have no idea of the legalities of why the contract's even structured like this. Why is it like this? What makes it permissible? How are you going? Why are you paying the? Why are you renting your own house from the bank? There's the legalities that come into this and the Sharia side. Therefore, to answer that question, it's just at that level. It just pours water over the idea already that the bank's not there. It's your house. I'm not undermining it. I'm saying the complexity of the structure, and I don't want to, that's why I don't want to discuss, I don't want to make this discussion just purely about these contracts. This is going to consume us and we will not come to an end. I mean, if somebody really wants to understand their contract, let's take out one whole Saturday, 8-9 hours, and we can unpack that contract. Yeah, if anybody's prepared to do it, inshallah, we'll happily do it. Inshallah. But we still love all of you, inshallah. So I'll take one question here, Salam, while we...
Okay. Just a simple question. How have you seen this Islamic finance industry evolve over the years in Australia? Why I'm asking this is, are we getting anywhere with this? In terms of getting a standards, or we are getting away from them, or the things are getting even more complex? And we all know there's a new Islamic bank coming down soon, the first Australian Islamic bank. So I don't know if we are getting closer, or are we catching up with the international standards?
I think to answer that question, again, it's quite a difficult question. Again, it's not a criticism of the industry. It has come a long way. It started from nowhere. Something has to happen in order for things to progress. The environment is not conducive to it. The legal environment is just not conducive to it. Just recently in some of the eastern states, for example, the way the contracts are structured, why I asked that question, the reason it's structured like this is because of double stamp duty. It's a major issue. Because if we had to transfer the title to the bank and then have another stamp duty 20 years down the line, the product's already expensive. Imagine how much more expensive it would have got it. Right? So this is one of the reasons. This is a room for fatwa in this now. To say, okay, we have a real issue here. But in some of the eastern states, there's now a very, very close legislation going to be passed that Islamic finance, certain products, there will be no double stamp duty. Now, this is a game changer in the way the product's going to be designed. It's a game changer. It's going to change the whole way that this product. Now imagine the complexities that come out. Somebody who has a 10-year contract and how many existing customers, because you now no longer have reason to structure your contract like this. So it changes everything on its head. So there are certain inroads being made, but this particular tax break or double stamp duty issue was 10 years in the making. 10 years in the making. After 10 years, legislation got passed. So it's making headway very slowly. But again, Islamic finance as a whole globally is a very complex thing. And does it represent globally what Islamic finance really should be about? Or are there too many loopholes? It's a whole different story altogether. I don't know if I'm being a bit, you know, diversive away and moving away from answering the question. I'll take one question online, inshallah, while somebody thinks about something else. Okay, inshallah. So, okay, for giving someone with an interest-free loan, is it allowed to transact in terms of gold to cater for inflation? For giving someone with interest-free loan, is it allowed to transact in terms of gold to cater for inflation? I think that's a good question, except that whatever you transact in, the transaction needs to be reciprocated in the same. So you cannot say I'm giving you $100,000 and you need to give me $100,000 worth of gold in 10 years' time. You transact in gold from the start and you get repaid in gold. You transact in AUD from the start and you get paid back in the same. You cannot cater for it in this way. This, if somebody says, you know, I'm giving you $100,000 now and you need to give me what the worth of gold was of $100,000 in 20 years' time, that will be impermissible because certainly the gold value, say, will be more at that time. So that is exactly what riba is. It will have to be the proportionate amount in relation to what was given. I'll just take another quick question from here. How do you calculate zakat if someone has a long-term mortgage? So this is a common question. Long-term mortgage, number one, provided it's Islamic finance. If it's conventional finance, it will not be considered a liability. Islamic finance, your mortgage will be considered a liability with the following conditions. Not the entire duration of the loan. Not 10 years, 300,000. But rather the obligation for the next 12 months. So your zakat here, for example, you pay on the 1st of Ramadan. Those who have Islamic finance will know that on a 12-month basis, they review your contract. Your obligation will be X amount for this year, $30,000. That $30,000 is a deductible liability, not the entire loan. Why? The $30,000, Sharia considers it a liability because this is something that's an obligation, and therefore it's something that you are already obligated, contracted to pay, and therefore it's a legitimate liability. The same principle will apply to tax. Okay, the tax that you will pay at year end, if you're able to already, if you're paying on the 1st of Ramadan, your zakat, and you know the financial year is there and this is, you know, probably what your tax is going to be, you can use that as a liability as well. Obviously, at the end of the year, you need to do a bit of a reconciliation to ensure that you haven't over-deducted. If there was, then you need to compensate for the zakat for that. any other questions? Inshallah. So this is a misconception. There are two types of interest. One is the riba al-Qur'an, the riba which is mentioned in the Qur'an, which is clear-cut mentioned. And then there is riba al-Hadith, the riba which is mentioned in the Hadith. There are two different concepts. People have this perception that to receive interest is impermissible, to pay it is not, there's nothing wrong with it. The Hadith is very clear on this, Sahih Muslim, that la'anallahu akila riba wa mukilahu. وَشَاهِدَهُ وَكَاتِبَهُ وَشَاهِدَهُ. May Allah curse the person who consumes riba and feeds it to others. The payer of riba is just as guilty as the consumer of the riba. There's no distinction. There are some contemporary people who are by and large deniers of hadith, say that riba is only of one type, which is found in the Quran. Beyond that, there is no prohibition on it. But rather, both consumption and payment of riba are equally impermissible. Okay, while we're thinking of the next question, is indexing concept that is used in HECS student loan considered riba? Our position on this, having discussed this with many ulama across Australia, across the world, indexation is nothing but a form of compensation for time value of money. That's all it is over a period of time. That's what indexation simply is. Indexation is riba. A HECS loan, again, there's other views on this. Our view on this, along with a host of ulama, is that the current HECS loan based on indexation is a riba loan, and therefore it is impermissible. There used to be, up till the end of this last year, academic year, there was one way that we could use HECS, and that was, if anybody has used it, that you can sign up for HECS, and then when you sign up, whatever the modules are, for example, $5,000, and it gives you 30 days to pay. If you pay inside of those 30 days, the full amount, you were getting a 10% discount. That is permissible to do because it's just a discount being offered for a cash or upfront payment. So obviously, I mean, government got wise with this because there were people who didn't need a HECS loan and were just using this to get a 10% discount. Why not? And end of 22, unfortunately, this came to an end. And from the beginning of 2023, that option is no longer offered. Somebody takes a HECS loan, it needs to be paid off over its period of time. But nonetheless, a HECS loan is indexation, by and large, is exactly what it does to compensate for riba. So that's our position on this, inshallah. Any other questions? Anything else? Okay, inshallah. There's still a host of questions that we have in the Slido, but I think it's way too late, inshallah. We seek forgiveness. Please, if you need, you can contact me directly, or you can go to the website ciea.com.au, and inshallah there's an email address there. You can send that via, inshallah. Also, tonight is our last night. Tomorrow night, Mufti Abdul Rahman will be here. It was an honor spending time with you, inshallah, but we're still here, and we're still always available, inshallah. Zakumullah khair, subhanallah, bifadlihi.